This podcast is brought to you by Soapbox. Start your own podcast today at www.soapbox.host.
Tonight on our first spooky season episode in our show's history, we hear a classic Staten Island urban legend of a crazed serial killer with a penchant for nabbing kids off the street. We explore the abandoned institutions looming over the woods in the heart of the borough that potentially inspired the tale. Keep listening tonight for a disturbing twist that will chill you to the bone. It's Wednesday at 9 p.m. Welcome back, guys, to a very special episode. Before we get in, some brief announcements. This is our first October, which naturally lends itself very well to our show. We've got big plans for this month. I hope you guys are excited. And a special. We'll be releasing one episode per week for all of October instead of once every 2 weeks, given that I can edit everything in time. And we'll have a Halloween special campfire episode in the form of a roundtable with ourselves and our friends. So look out for that episode to drop Halloween night. How are you guys feeling about our first October on the show?
I think it's exciting.
Yeah, spooky season always brings out the ghouls and goblins.
Yeah, so we're going to have some episodes that maybe are a little more Halloween themed or a little spookier, a little, you know, change up a tiny bit. I know Nick has some interesting things down the line that he's told me about, which I'm a little...
Yeah, get ready for next week.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting there. So I can't wait to hear what you come up with too, Aaron. And yep. Before we get into ours, other announcements, of course, we've got shout outs. Any shout outs?
Oh, I got some shout outs. Shout out to Troy from Nick. Shout out to Fallon for helping set us up with a Facebook page and business cards. Yes. Which we may or may not include on the website. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Certainly. All right. And lastly, for Bobby, who has been distributing the business cards. Sorry. All right. You go with your shout out.
Shout out to Bobby's mom, who left us feedback on last episode on our website, Wednesday9pm.com/13, I believe. Yep. Is that episode?
Yep.
And of course, go ahead, Nick.
Shout out, of course, to David Hoy.
Of course, you got it. You got it.
Shout out to my girlfriend, Maddie, and my mom, who have somehow stuck it through every episode.
That's wonderful. That's what, like, that explains the, yeah.
Have given 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Remember to rate the podcasts.
Yeah, I was just looking at that today. We actually have a pretty good rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. There still is one person that left us a 1-star review on Apple Podcasts. I still think it's Wolf. But that's
probably it's a very good chance.
There's a good chance, but that's okay.
That's the only thing keeping us back from getting sponsors.
Honestly, it's that one thing. We'll convince him one day. Maybe he'll be on the round table for Halloween. We'll see if we can get him. But okay. So, like I said, little spookier episodes. We're going to start off Spooktober with a good old urban legend.
Black Eyed Kids?
Well, this one is a little more local. To all of us, but me in particular. So, of course, New York, like any other state, has its fair share of urban legends passed down over generations and generations, often orally. Stories shared around campfires, ones like the one I was around just last weekend with some friends. Oh, yeah. Shared when the darkness around the fire dimming seems to hold who knows what kind of spooks. So, what do you guys know about the wonderful, oft overlooked borough of Staten Island? Anything?
I'm pretty sure, because I looked recently at cost of living there. It's not that expensive to live there, but people make a lot of money there. So honestly, like relatively, like for the cost of living. So honestly, maybe it's better than Manhattan. That's for sure.
That is such a fresh take, I will say, as a non-city person. I did not expect you to say that's awesome. What about you, Aaron? Do you know anything about Staten Island? It is closer to Jersey than to the rest of the city.
Yeah, but I don't like going up to the city all that often. Aren't the Impractical Jokers from Staten Island?
I believe they are, yes.
That's about the extent of my knowledge about and Staten Island.
Best Export.
Okay, well, yeah, we could have done without that one.
Just saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so Staten Island is that somewhat triangular island in the New York Harbor, south of Manhattan, between Jersey and Brooklyn. And interestingly, it is closer to Jersey than New York. And while it's the least populated borough, it's the third largest of the city. And over 40% of its residents are of Italian descent. Ayo, I have them in my notes. Ayo. So I'm sure to say that.
And is that going to be episode title?
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Ayo.
Staten Island has also a crazy number of parks and large amount of forested land. This is kind of because the island was kind of, I don't want to say ignored, it was kind of isolated from the rest of the city, especially before there was a bridge between it and Brooklyn, built in, I want to say, the 50s or the 60s. I have distant relatives here, and I visited for like family reunions in the past, and I have some good friends from high school, so nobody better make fun of Staten Island, or you might end up sleeping with the fishes.
See?
And with that, back to urban legends, right? Now, there's a stretch of pretty old forested land across Staten Island called the Green Belt. And bordering this Green Belt, there are, you know, Boy Scout camps. And what's most interesting is there are a few old abandoned institutions. There was an old tuberculosis ward and the New York City Farm Colony, which was a poor farm. Harkening back to Nick's story about, what was the name of the place?
Rolling Hills Asylum.
Rolling Hills Asylum also was a poor farm for a time, right? Where folks worked.
Yeah, just don't tell Sharon that it exists.
I know, right? She might swoop in and purchase the property. So this forested area and, you know, even the abandoned areas around, kids would often hang out in the area trying to scare each other with spooky stories of monsters and killers and so on. And the story I want to focus on in the 1970s, one particular urban legend was very prevalent in Staten Island. It was said that a crazed murderer hiding away in the woods in one of the abandoned, dilapidated buildings was an escaped patient from one of the mental asylums there. It was said that he had a long, long knife in his left hand and a hook for his right hand. And it was said he was very skilled with both. And it'd be whispered from parents to kids saying, hey, don't go, you know, don't go out at night. Don't, you know, get off the school bus and get right back home. And it would be whispered between, you know, Boy Scouts at camp or kids at summer camp. It was said that he'd stalk children that strayed too far into the woods near his haunt. And when nobody was looking, he would hook him in, drag him into the woods, back to his abandoned hospital lair to never be seen again. And of course, it was said they'd suffer a horrifying fate. Chopped to pieces. Oh, so, yeah, pretty disturbing urban legend that was shared for those years. And it said that this madman was, of course, right, his backstory. He was ruthlessly abused in the mental institution he was in before it was shut down. And as a result, you know, he escaped and he seeks to inflict the same pain and suffering on other children in revenge. And this is interesting. I found that this general legend was pretty popular across a wider region than just Staten Island, like kind of the whole Hudson River Valley area, downstate New York, and all of the Jersey has this kind of very similar idea. I just want to ask you guys, do you have any local urban legends from your parts of the woods?
Not that I can think of.
No offense, Aaron, you have like the three people around you.
There's, okay, like, you mean nah. Like the classic, like, oh, he's got a hook for a hand and he's going to get you. No, not that I can think of.
There's, I mean, I have a haunt, like a alleged haunted location in Johnstown.
Are you talking about the
Knox Mansion?
Oh, okay. But no urban legends of crazed killers?
No, but we did have a clown flap when that was happening.
Oh, that's spooky.
But there is, I don't know if it's really an urban legend, but like if you knew, there was a guy that I went to middle school and early high school with, because then his family ended up moving. He and his family lived in this really big old house off of Route 5. And if you were like friends with him, or like you knew the family relatively well, then you would know like the house I'm talking about. But my friend Chris was friends with him and stayed at the house, and a lot of weird things happened. So it's like he experienced them, the family experienced them. So not really an urban legend, but it is like
a little more real than an urban legend, though.
Yeah, if you know, like it's a pretty.
We gotta get him on the show to tell a story. Is that the story his dad told or something once in the video that you showed me?
Or am I thinking of something totally different? This was totally different. Like this, we were friends with this guy when we were in like, I don't know. Well, he was closer with him than I. Chris was closer with him than I was, but like 6th, 7th, 8th grade.
Gotcha.
Nick, what about that Native American land? That's
oh yeah. I guess that is an urban legend. I think it's on Hickory Hill.
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
I think that's what it's off of. Yeah, right near one of my friends. There is like an old Native American village there, and the story goes that martyrs were killed there and were tortured, basically. And there's the story of this pole on the property called the torture pole, and apparently. It will constantly move. And some of them being my friends, have gone there and have had very interesting experiences. Again, Chris being one of them. We definitely should get him on the show.
We actually should.
Because, yeah, he's had a lot of stuff. But, yeah, not just a lot of more like people experiences than urban legends. We don't have any like women in white, black eyed kid stuff, but like locations that are said to be haunted. And then there are stories that come from those places.
Definitely. That's interesting. I need to, it would be great to get Chris on. I don't know if you can make that happen. Look into that.
After closer to winter, because then he'll be laid off.
Perfect.
Well, construction, seasonal unemployment.
No, you're going to get him fired.
Yeah, I'm gonna say this guy, he's haunted. Don't lie.
He's haunted. Yeah, it's spiritual. Yeah, you could pass it like a virus, no? And you got poltergeist on, you pass it to other people.
What was that episode of the Wolfman virus or whatever? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, it said that I mean people experience paranormal things, poltergeists, ghosts. Sometimes they bring it home, and sometimes it passes to family members.
So yeah.
Through contact, or not even through any contact, which is weird, but that's for another time. Now, next question. Do you guys have in your neighborhoods or your local cities any old hospitals that are abandoned or mental institutions that are abandoned?
Nope.
Yeah. So one theory that I was reading about the proliferation of these sorts of urban legends is that as people were moving out of, like, you know, deep in the cities to more suburban areas, they started seeing these kind of old abandoned institutions on the land they were moving to, and, you know, started coming up with these sorts of urban legends. I want to focus on some of those institutions. So the New York Farm Colony, this started way, way back. Early 19th century, actually even earlier than that, goes back, I think, of potentially over 100 years, maybe even 200 years. This was a home where the indigent, which I learned means poor, could earn their keep. And right next to it was Seaview Hospital, a place for tuberculosis patients. And both of these places are located right next to a particular Willowbrook State School, which we're going to learn about. Factors very much into this legend. So these acres and acres of land have all these old crumbling buildings, a lot of history here. And once these places were abandoned, all sorts of people, from kids out for a good time to ghost hunters, invaded the grounds constantly. And in the 80s, you know, that's the height of the satanic panic. And it was said that those abandoned institutions were where devil worshippers held black masses on makeshift altars garnered from the ruins. That could probably be a whole story in and of itself.
It's and like the same worshipers in Vail Cemetery.
Yeah, there's always... And when was that comment left? Was that an old story? Was that like a recent one?
I'd have to go back. It was someone that relayed the story when they were younger. So I don't know how old that person is now.
So I guess it's that's just really is in like, you know, whether that's real or whether it's just in the zeitgeist of people at the time and is carried through. Pretty interesting. Now, this Willowbrook State School, it was said that this was the murderer's favorite hideout. And there was a name for this murderer in the legend, Cropsey. You guys ever heard the name Cropsey?
No.
Nope.
I'd never heard it either. I could not find in all my investigation the origin, the etymology of this name. It just seemed to have popped up in Staten Island in the 70s.
Maybe it was like an Italian slang word that maybe, has been maybe lost to time. Is. Or someone was dyslexic and was supposed to be Corpsey.
Oh, spooky.
But then it was like, oh, Corpsey, I wrote Cropsey on hand. The birth certificate.
Who would that name their kid Corpsey?
What's the guy's name? Corpse Husband.
Corpse Husband, the street, the Twitch streamer or something, right?
Yeah.
We should ask him, yeah.
Maybe it's you?
Yeah, so I couldn't figure out the source of this name. And it's just something interesting. It's spelled Cropsey. So all throughout the 70s, it was, you know, kids would say, hey, you know, well, gotta be careful. Don't check out the graffitied ruins of Willowbrook. You know, Cropsey will get you. He'll hook you. He'll make you disappear. And the reason all of these legends about Cropsey were circling around Willowbrook is because Willowbrook has a very disturbing history.
Oh, good.
Opened in 1938, it was used as a home for mentally disabled kids. And then during World War II, it had to serve as an army hospital. After the war, it was reopened as Willowbrook State School. And a number of, you know, quote unquote, students calling this a school increased drastically, getting to a point where there was like a ratio of like every worker had like over 50 students/patients to attend to.
Oh my God.
Now, it was called a school, but in practice, it was, quote, nothing more than a warehouse for the developmentally disabled. Basically, disabled kids were left there to be taken care of. And I guess from its just because of its distance from the rest of the city and the lack of scrutiny, especially back then in decades past, it just let terrible, terrible conditions last there for a really long time. In fact, Robert F. Kennedy called the place a snake pit back in 1965 after touring it and seeing the terrible conditions. But actually, it took years and years before the malpractice there came to light and was eventually shut down. In 1972, a doctor who worked there was so distressed about the conditions there and the treatment of the patients, he let a local investigative reporter, Geraldo Rivera, slip in to film what he saw. It's kind of cool. He literally slipped the guy a key and was like, just go in with the camera one day and film what you see. There were a few other people who had managed to slip inside and report on what they saw, but this was the first guy to get it televised nationally, and it went wild. So I watched a documentary that included brief clips of this publicized report, and I would say it is some of the most disturbing few seconds I've ever seen.
Few seconds? That's all they got?
I was skipping through it because I don't encourage you to watch it. It is linked in the description.
Perfect.
What did he see when he went in? He saw patients who are children, right? These are children. Developmentally disabled, living in complete filth and disease, often naked, dressed in rags, smeared with, let's say, bodily fluids, scattered like on floors, just like squirming. Or running, or just like curled up, This sounds, like as I'm saying, it sounds kind of crazy, but you can see the old school 1972 TV footage of this. It's so disturbing. So there were disgusting, completely inhuman conditions for the children here. And these were kids that were completely, I mean, think about like completely nonverbal kids, sometimes really, really young, completely unable to take care of themselves or speak out for themselves. So this investigation uncovered a host of deplorable conditions, including, quote, overcrowding, inadequate sanitary facilities, and physical and sexual abuse of residents by members of the school's staff. So in the years prior to this, cutbacks in funding to Willowbrook brought down the number of staff to a skeleton crew of barely trained caretakers, some of whom probably really wanted to help and were trying to help and were totally overworked, but some who obviously delighted in abusing the patients with no repercussion.
For the former of those that actually did care, it's tough to take care of 50 developmentally challenged children.
Oh, yeah.
Much less 50 able children.
I believe there were thousands of kids here. So imagine that.
Yeah, but like 50 to a person, you said?
At least. I mean, that's how stretched thin they were.
Crazy.
Oh, it's horrifying. I mean, the video is terrible. So you can imagine the legend of Cropsey being an escaped patient from this place, wanting to enact some revenge on the community. Makes a lot of sense. These were all kids who were dropped off and left by their families, and their families didn't really check on them, right? They thought, yeah, they'll be taken care of here. Totally abandoned. Staten Island, especially back then, kind of had this reputation of a dumping ground. It was used as a trash dump by the city for many, many, many years. It was used as a dumping ground for illicit things, for bodies from the mafia, like from killings.
I wonder where he's going with this.
Yeah. Forget about it.
And unfortunately, even a lot of those stereotypes exist to this day where people go, oh, Trash Island. Oh, I could smell Staten Island from here. Oh, you know,
that's something your dad said.
No, my dad stands up for Staten Island because we have some family there and because it is mostly Italian. So it is associated with kind of anti-Italian-American sentiment when you make fun of Staten Island. But to make matters worse, there were even hepatitis experiments done on the children here between 1956 and 1971.
I don't even know what that would entail, just giving them hepatitis?
Yeah, well, they found out that kids that arrived here, 90% of them would get hepatitis.
Oh.
No, that's just that was like the starting assumption.
Yeah, that's a null hypothesis.
So they gave it to the 10 other percent to investigate how hepatitis spread.
Oh.
And there's some disturbing quotes here. You know, I'm going to read these and maybe in editing I'll decide to cut them out or not. So it was known that hepatitis was caused by virus, but it wasn't known how it spread, how it could be prevented, or how many types of viruses cause the disease. So one of the researchers, Saul Krugman from NYU at the time, did studies involving feeding live hepatitis virus from others' stool samples to 60 healthy children. And he watched as their skin and eyes turned yellow and their livers got bigger. He watched them vomit and refuse to eat. All became seriously ill. And he said, he reasoned it was justifiable to inoculate disabled children at Willowbrook with hepatitis because most of them would get it anyway. And according to vaccinologist Maurice Hilleman, the Willowbrook studies were the most unethical medical experiments ever performed on children in the U.S.
I was going to say, you got to put U.S. in there.
Yeah. Yes. In the U.S.
Like, well, come on.
Yes, if only those were the worst in the world. And thank God, eventually, when this came to light and was publicized, the institution was sued by the parents of many of the patients. The state stepped in and went, oh, shoot, we messed up. How did we let this happen?
We done goofed.
But it took over 10 years before the place finally was shut down and the last patients were discharged. Most of these patients were moved out to group homes, but some were removed and just left to fend for themselves. So you can see how this urban legend is forming, because it was whispered around these times that some of the patients that were left to fend for themselves out of habit just returned to the property that was now abandoned and took up shelter where? In the tunnels underground between the buildings. Cropsey was said to be one such escaped patient. So the legend of Cropsey terrorized young boys and girls across Staten Island, making them scared to stay out late, causing them to keep an eye behind them when walking home at night. And I can just imagine, right? I mean, imagine your teens, you're hanging out here in this abandoned property in the woods one day. All the graffitied walls and everything's falling apart, and you're joking, oh, watch out for Cropsey, making hook hands, right? And it scared kids for a whole generation. And now you might think, that's the end of the legend. That's the end of the story. The legend slowly faded away as time went on. Obviously, by this point in time, I haven't heard of the Cropsey legend. Creepypastas online overtook these sorts of local legends, right? Well, unfortunately, that's not how the story ends.
Because, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. Oh. This urban legend took a pretty disturbing twist. So let's jump forward to 1987. After a grueling and tireless 35-day search, a firefighter uncovers a small foot shallowly buried in the grounds of a Willowbrook State School. The remains of a 12-year-old Jennifer Schwager, a local child with Down syndrome who had just gone missing, was found. That's disturbing enough, but that wasn't the only child that had gone missing in Staten Island during that time. In fact, in the 70s and 80s, there were a string of mysterious child disappearances. The urban legend of Cropsey wasn't just an urban legend.
It happened.
Yeah.
It actually happened.
Who then was Cropsey? Is the question.
Jack the Ripper.
Well, we don't actually know, but there's one guy it probably was, and I'm going to tell his story. Andre Rand was an orderly, so I think that just means like a janitor or like a worker. Oh, actually, let me rephrase that, because he was not an orderly. That's
orderly. Isn't the orderly like the bodyguard of the hospital, pretty much?
Kind of, for like in the psychiatric ward, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like they do like the takedowns and stuff if someone they do escapes or whatever.
WWE SmackDown off the top rope.
Okay, he's orderly or janitor. There's like conflicting reports, so let me rephrase that. Okay. Andre Rand was an orderly or janitor, it's not clear, that worked from 1966 to 1968 at Willowbrook. Now, back in the day, employers did not have very thorough background checks like they do nowadays.
I wonder where this is going.
Lots of people who probably shouldn't get through would get through in these sorts of institutions, especially those run by like the state. For example, there was even an escaped convict from, I believe it was the early 20th century, Willie Sutton, who changed his name, escaped from jail, and went to live and work at the New York Colony Farm for years. And no one realized.
Did he just got away with that? Bad though?
Oh yeah, he kept committing crimes.
Oh.
Oh yeah, no, he didn't stop.
Say, if he was arrested and then changed his name and then got his life around,
he escaped. He's like, you know what? Not gonna do that again.
Let him be.
Oh no, he kept committing crimes.
All right, never mind.
So at Willowbrook, especially because of the budget cutbacks, basically anyone could get hired.
Oh.
Probably contributes to some of the people who abuse the kids too. Now, Rand, in retrospect, this guy should not be working at Willowbrook. He was first convicted of sexual assault on a minor. It was after he left Willowbrook, but he had a lot of previous history doing messed up things with kids. Everyone in the area who knew him knew there was something very wrong with him. Now, in a moment, I'm going to show you a picture. Actually, let's look at it right now. I will post a picture of this man. Check the show notes for it. It's being uploaded now to you guys.
Oh.
What do you think? What do you think?
He looks like a, like, comically an old time villain.
Yeah, I can see that. Looks like a grumpy old man, but like middle aged.
How about, do you see any crazy in his eyes or no?
Not
oh my. Oh goodness. That second one?
Is he drooling?
That's something.
Yes, he is drooling in the second photo.
He probably got beaten up.
So,
are you super drugged up?
This interesting man, his mother had suffered from mental illness and had lived at the Pilgrim State Asylum in Long Island, which, weird coincidence, had the same floor plan as Willowbrook. Interesting connection that he ended up working there then. And although he left his job at Willowbrook State School in 1966, he never left the grounds. He set up a campsite, actually a few campsites there, sharing with many other homeless, some of which were previous patients as they started to be moved out, and some of which had never stayed at Willowbrook or any of the surrounding institutions at all. And when the institutions fully closed, they all moved into the underground tunnels. So lots of the aspects of this urban legend of Cropsey are real. There were people living in the woods around Willowbrook of varying levels of stability and sanity in the underground tunnels. Some of the buildings were purchased and sold to developers over time as the institutions closed, but some of buildings still sat abandoned back then as they do today, decrepit, covered in trash, weeds, and just scattered with remnants of the asylum and the hospitals and everything. As for that 12-year-old girl, Andre Rand was seen with that poor girl before her disappearance. And once on trial, that's the picture that you guys saw of him, like, being carried / walking, and his head is bent over, drooling, and he's bug-eyed.
So that's in the 80s.
Yes. This was 1987 that he was considered the prime suspect in the disappearance of that 12-year-old girl.
Gotcha.
I'd buy it.
Just people seeing him look like that was enough to pretty much convince everyone that he was the kidnapper and the killer. However, there never was enough physical evidence, like actual evidence that could be found to link him to the killing. Really, even to the kidnapping, but public opinion, the jury was pretty convinced that he at least did the kidnapping. And he was convicted of kidnapping, though notably not of murder, and received a life sentence.
Well, that's good.
And later on, he was tied to at least 4 other child disappearances. He has like 3 or 4 life sentences at this point. I think he's eligible for parole when he's going to be like 100 or something like that.
He's alive?
Yes. Actually, unless he's died in the past few years. Actually, I should look that up. He was alive as of a few years ago. Let's see if he's alive. Yes, he's alive. He's eligible for parole in 2037.
That's 14 years. How old is he right now?
He was born in 1944, so he is probably like, is that 80? He's going to be 80, 79, 80?
He's going to be 80 next year. Add 13 to that. He'll be 93 when he can be on parole.
I feel like Damn. That's not long enough. Like, that's not a life sentence. That's like a, hey, you're probably old enough.
You know what? this is actually such an interesting thing that now we're talking about, and it will tie in to my episode.
What? With how is this good to tie in?
At least in terms of sentencing and sentences that should not have, that should have been longer.
Interesting. Well, that's the thing. He was later on, he was tied to at least a handful of other child disappearances from years past. So he was associated with a disappearance in 1972. So think about this. This is him in 1987 getting convicted for the kidnapping. And later on, they piece things together and they associate him and they convict him of kidnapping as well. A 5-year-old, Alice Pereira. In 1981, a 7-year-old named Holly Ann Hughes and an 11-year-old, Tyhees Jackson. And in 1984, a 21-year-old, Hank Gaforio.
He got a 21-year-old?
So almost all of these people were developmentally disabled in some way.
That'll do it.
Including Hank Gaforio, who was just like a really sweet, well-known... they called him a quote low IQ person, which nowadays is just like a joke that I would message one of you guys on Discord. But I guess, you know, take that as you will for what that meant in like the '80s. None of those bodies were ever found. Staten Island is a pretty close knit community. There are not many people there compared to the other boroughs. And this was a really, really shocking, harrowing experience to the community there. And there were long searches, grueling searches for these people. Thank goodness at least the body of the 12-year-old, whose name I am pulling up. Oh, where's the name?
Jennifer.
The 12-year-old Jennifer was found, but none of the bodies ever were found. And as of at least the past like 10 years ago, people were still looking decades later.
Is there, me not having been to Staten Island, is there a lot of like places to look? Like, I thought it was a city, so it was like a lot of buildings, not a lot of places to bury a body per se.
Yeah, so Staten Island is a much more suburban borough than pretty much all the other boroughs. There's less people, much more suburban. As Nick said, it's actually might have the highest average like income or net worth. So very family oriented. And because of the relatively low density, there's a lot of forested places and hidden places.
And
so
real forest, not Long Island forests.
Yeah, real forest. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They're not plastic trees planted along the highway to slow you down. Thank you for the clarification, Nick. That is a very important thing.
Make sure.
Yes. So there are actually many places in Staten Island. Hence why it was used as a disposing place for to keep things away from prying eyes.
Yeah.
We'll say prying eyes, we'll say. So the differences here between the legend and reality were that these kids weren't disappearing from the woods. I mean, whoever was kidnapping them, whether it's Andre or not, probably was. It was just like almost in broad daylight. Like it wouldn't be kids walking into the woods and disappearing. It'd be like during the day, these kids just disappeared. One kid walked and went to get soap at a grocery store and disappeared on the way back. It was those sorts of things. So you can imagine how terrifying this was to a community. And I thought this was going to be pretty clear cut when I started to find out that there was an actual person potentially behind this. But there never actually was physical evidence found that made it obvious that Andre Rand committed the crimes.
Yeah, because like, at least for the one... A foot was found from Jennifer.
And then the whole body.
Oh, okay. So it's the whole body. There's no murder weapon.
Yeah. Right?
And why would, and then like, you know, they always like weapon and then like motive. It's like, why would he do that?
Yeah. So
like, even if he had problems,
Yeah, so he had problems with children. I mean, and the location of the poor, the buried body was found like 100 yards from his campsite, but there was never
100 yards from his campsite.
He was seen around the vicinity of some of the kids before they disappeared, but it was never like, hey, I saw, I'm, you know, Johnny told me he saw Andre Rand carrying like a little girl into the woods, right? There was never any sort of that. There was never any clear evidence. And Andre Rand refused to ever speak. Many believe, of course, that he committed the crimes. Others argue that he was framed and used as a scapegoat by a community that didn't want to accept that there could be more than one culprit. I mean, how terrifying would that be, knowing that someone is in your suburban neighborhood picking kids off the street?
But and a 21-year-old, that's kind of the weird wrench.
Yeah, and a 21-year-old. Yeah,
it's not all kids. They all have developmental issues, but not all kids.
A little anecdote about that poor 21-year-old Hank. He was in the publicized, or this was all on TV, local news. Like, you know, the parents would show up and, you know, say, please help us, you know, come on the search, help us find our kids. And they'd show pictures and everything. In one of those broadcasts, the 21-year-old Hank is seen in the background, like right there in the background. Meanwhile, he was the next person to disappear.
Whoa.
Pretty spooky. Pretty spooky, sad stuff. But
that's weird.
There were also suspicions of a unnamed satanic cult at the time behind these disappearances. Some suggest that there was a network or a cabal, dare I say, of former patients living in the tunnels. Maybe they were possible suspects helping each other. Maybe they were helping Andre. And of course, the speculation, the stories became more and more sensational as more and more people got involved and more attention and more children disappeared. So overall, that's where the story ends. Andre Rand is in jail for a long, long time. Did he do it? Probably. And these crimes will always be associated with the legend of Cropsey, but they were real horrifying experiences for Staten Island in the 70s and 80s. And whoever the perpetrator was, they left long-lasting scars on many residents. And if you want to learn more about the legend become reality of Cropsey and about the different perspectives, shout out to Aaron, multiple different perspectives on
thanks,
whether
Frank.
He could potentially be responsible for all of them. I really highly recommend you watch the award-winning documentary from 2009 called Cropsey by Joshua Zeman and Barbara Brincaccio. It's free on Amazon Prime Video. And I was, it's one of the sources. I was skimming through it a lot. And I plan to watch it in its entirety. It was a little too disturbing in the middle and sad, but it'll be linked in the description. But that was something that brought it back into the national attention back in 2009, a few decades after it all happened, when the people who still experienced that time were still alive and still remembered it. And the family members of the children who disappeared are still wondering what happened to their sister, to their brother. What do you guys think?
You know, this is one of those weird ones where, because think about what are, you know, the classic urban legends, right? Black-eyed kids, women in white, so on and so forth. Those are the two that just popped into my head. But those, you know, that's on the, you know, supernatural side of things. So it's always, or in like, you know, the yokai in Japan. And then this one, it's a lot more grounded. And then there is something that happened like exactly related to it. Where it's like, if you see a woman in white on the road, no one's going to believe you unless it's an actual person.
That's half grounded, right? That one's like half grounded in reality, right? Like you can imagine someone, woman in white. You could literally imagine someone like trying to spook people dressing up as a woman in white on the road, right? Like our kids, that one's more like,
you just get crazy special contacts.
Yeah.
and then run at superhuman speeds towards a car.
You know, with Halloween coming up, that would kind of be a cool costume for kids.
Black don't kids. Give anyone any ideas.
Anyone got kids out there? Give them contacts. I guess it's kind of lazy, though, right? I mean, what do they dress up as?
I don't know, but if you have a kid and they can do superhuman feats of strength, speed, or agility, put black contacts in their eyes and freak people out.
That's what you should do, indeed. If your kid is, if your kid can keep up with like a speeding car,
then go for it. But anyway, it's really interesting that this time, an urban legend. I feel like all urban legends have some some twinge of truth that like something had to have happened that made someone think about this.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like a chicken or the egg, right? Like which one came first, you know?
Because which one came first for this one? Like, was it Cropsey and then the guy? I don't remember if you said the timeline, but
It seems that the legend of Cropsey is sounds like definitely it was like 70s. Yeah, it's roughly the same time period. I couldn't find the earliest occurrence, but it seems like it was early 70s when it really became a really popular legend. Now, 1972 is when the 5-year-old Alice disappears. So could it be that there is like a single child disappearance and then the legend builds up around it? And then like, does the culprit, whether it's Andre or not, like, play off, like, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic.
Is it one of those things where it's like fact and fiction? If a serial killer like gets named, they're like, oh, you know, I'm gonna go down in history as the Zodiac. Wait,
is that a
killer
thing? Is that like a
sociology?
I mean, is that considered a thing? That's interesting.
Maybe not, but like on like crime shows and things, like I remember I was just watching an episode of maybe NCIS with my mom, and it was like some guy, like the media gave him a name. Give the killer a name. And so he was like, I'm going to go down in the history books. Everyone's going to know my name, know my face. Cause he's just like insane and wanted to kill people for fame, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then of course they do something in the show where they don't show the guy's face or say his name or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's a thing. Like if you give a name to like a serial killer, you know, it'll kind of stroke their ego. Cause most serial killers are probably very narcissistic.
You would imagine. I would hope they are, in the sense that I hope they're not just normal people, right? Because what does that mean for
us
normal
people?
Right? That would be scarier. I need to throw in Andre Rand wasn't his birth name.
Oh.
Can you take a wild guess what his birth name was, at least his first name?
What was his nationality?
That's a great question. I believe.
Looks Italian.
Oh, was it Frank?
It was Frank.
Oh my god.
I didn't look that up. I just thought
it was
about what
Frank Rostam Rushan. He went by a few different names. Then he went by Frank Bruchette or Bruchette. And then Andre Rand, probably because he kept getting caught messing with kids. That's my guess.
That'll do it.
So I had a couple things I wanted to say. First off, to kind of branch, like make a bridge from what Nick was saying about giving someone a name gives them power and like boosts their ego. That's actually very common in a lot of supernatural things where names hold very important powers over an entity or
it's true,
whatever. So I just want to add that little tidbit of...
That's a good point.
So maybe it's not just the supernatural. Maybe just life in general thrives off of name.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, no, that is very interesting. And the fact that the guy changes his name a lot. Yeah, I mean, what is in the name? I mean, I would love to know where the word Cropsey came from, right?
Yeah,
it is
too.
A creepy name, right? It does sound like the name of a creepy... hook-handed murderer. Now, as far as I know, Andre Rand didn't have a hook for a hand, but Cropsey. Yeah, I don't know.
Were you saying something? Remind me about something with a farm.
Yeah, so right next to the Willowbrook State Hospital, in the same patch of forested land, There was, right, so there was Willowbrook State Hospital. Then there was a New York Poor Farm, Poor Colony Farm, whatever it was. And right next to that was a hospital. So these three institutions were right next door to each other.
So maybe Cropsey came from like literally just crop, and because there was a farm there, and maybe like people were like, oh, there's this guy that comes out of the farm and his name's Cropsey. Like, I don't.
That's actually valid. There are versions of the Cropsey legends that say he's from the abandoned poor farm instead of the mental institution. So, maybe you're onto something there.
Yeah, I cracked the case.
actually, though, maybe.
And instead of a hook, it was just like a sickle.
Oh, my goodness.
Guys, we're doing it.
We're doing it.
And also the other point I wanted to make, it escaped me. I completely forgot. I had this train of thought and then it got interrupted. Shoot.
Black Eyed Kids, Cropsey.
No, Yo-kai. I had to.
Names,
Japan.
Oh,
Poor Farm.
I remember what I was going to say. So, in a lot of movies, and this is a random tangent, but a lot of movies and stuff, there's this classic trope of, oh, there's this couple at makeout point and there's a killer on the loose and whatever. And usually those stories aren't like based in any like, oh, there was actually a killer. So it's very weird to have seen this story and there's actually a killer, like, oh, actually watch out for Cropsey, he's gonna come get you.
Yeah, I wonder when the kids would tell the stories after there were a few kids who disappeared, like
if they knew,
yeah,
there's actually someone.
Yeah, would they make a connection? Yeah, would they make a connection like, oh, watch out for Cropsey, he just got that kid last year, you know? That's a little dark though. I don't know if kids would be that messed up. Like,
hey man,
you're gonna be the third kid. Yeah, what else would they do?
Well, it's they got nothing else to do, right? Actually,
70s and 80s, right?
Yeah.
So
it was just Andre, interesting.
Interesting to see that this one was actually based in fact, not just an urban legend. Like, oh, watch out, it's gonna get you. Like, there's actually something going on, coincidental or not.
Definitely. And, you know, there's still lots of unanswered questions. How many homeless people are living on that property? And, you know, to what extent were they potentially involved? Why did Rand change his name? How long did he live on the grounds? He's never admitted to anything. He's really weird. He would like send letters to people from jail and write like, I'll have links in the description for really bizarre rabbit holes about his behavior in jail. One thing that I found interesting, I want to pose to you guys. This is weird. This is a crazy theory. Some say that his experience working at Willowbrook, just for those 2 years, and seeing the terrible conditions there of the children, of the developmentally disabled children, maybe put him on like a sort of crusade to stop the suffering of little kids, particularly those who were handicapped.
So he'd kill them to end their suffering.
Kill them. Because think about everyone that disappeared that was associated with him was in some way handicapped. So obviously, I don't know about that. That's pretty messed up to even suppose.
So these killings were happening, though, when the hospital was still open, yes?
Yeah, so the very last patients were removed from Willowbrook State Hospital in, like, the late 80s, I think. Those in the process of being shut down. And these disappearances took place from early 70s to mid 80s, or late 80s as well, actually. So over almost 20 years.
Yeah, I think if he was really trying to make it better for them, he would have taken a different route. Like, oh, let's do what the video documentary did and expose it. Or, oh, if I'm going to kill someone, maybe kill the people that are abusing these kids and make a statement there. But like,
I mean, he abused kids too. So,
yeah, I don't, that part too really doesn't make me think he was doing it out of the goodness of his heart.
No, definitely not.
Okay, fine. Know. Scrap that theory.
I don't know who came up with that one, but
very good one. So yeah, yeah, that's there are a lot of another anecdote. In 1969, that's when Andre Rand was arrested for trying to assault that minor in none other than the South Bronx, my stomping ground next door. And this next is really weird. Yeah, I'm in the East Bronx. I'm not the South Bronx.
Oh, I thought you meant like next door to your house. I was like, what?
Yeah, this guy's my uncle. No, imagine. In 1983, this one's just bizarre. In 1983, while working for a Staten Island school bus company, he kidnapped 11 children, bought them lunch, and drove them to to Newark Airport for no apparent reason.
So that was harmless, more or less.
Is it harmless?
No one got hurt.
Kidnapping it's psychologically kids, I guess harmless.
Technically it is harmless.
Or harmful.
Technical.
Physically harmless. Mentally, so maybe just, not.
Did he just drop them off at the airport and just said, see ya? Or did he like, stay?
Detail there.
And
yeah. Then, I don't know.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, this guy obviously has a history of with children. He himself has issues. He worked in a place that was pretty insane, and he was seen with pretty much all of these victims. For example, that 22-year-old, he was the last seen with Andre Rand in a diner before disappearing. Mm-hmm. So none of these, it was never enough to convict him of murder, but he was being convicted of kidnapping up until like at least 2004. The trials were spread out over time.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the bodies of all the other victims were never recovered.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he killed them, because it doesn't seem like, from all the other things, kidnapping, sure.
But if they never showed up again,
I'm not saying he didn't have an accomplice.
Yeah, there were theories he had an accomplice that
you
would
said
like,
he lived with a bunch of other homeless people.
Yeah, there were a bunch on the property, and no one really knows how many or who.
It could have just been maybe that he was the one that procured the children, and then, you know, whoever else was the one. I mean, I don't want to say actually committing the crimes, but aside from kidnapping, actually committing the crimes.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's our first story of Spooktober, a real urban legend come to life. So if you're visiting Staten Island, probably still a touchy subject. Maybe don't go around talking about Cropsey. Again, I encourage you, if you want to look deeper into all of these, check out all the sources, the show notes, every Wednesday. So next up is Nick. Can you give us any teaser for what's to come?
In regards to talking about a lot of unanswered questions, Andre Rand, was he the right guy? Probably, but maybe not. Well, next week we'll be talking about a tool some people have used to try and determine if someone is guilty or not. It's one use of it.
Interesting. Very interesting. I can't wait. Aaron, do you happen to have any idea what you're doing next? I'll cut this if you don't.
Okay. I think I got something. I think I'm gonna go close to home for this one.
Wonderful. I love local spooky stories.
Man, I kind of threw local out the window of our slogan.
That's all good. It's Spooktober. We've got the spooky stories to please everyone.
True.
That sounds great.
Next week, we'll have
a little more paranormal, will you say, would you say, than this?
Oh, a lot, much more on the supernatural side.
Or swinging to the other side. The pendulum's going to the other side.
Swinging to the other side.
Home fantastic run, well.
Out to left field. And let me tell you, it's out the left field.
A perfect Nick episode. Perfect. Well,
I think my episode is going to be swinging that pendulum back.
we're going to be swinging back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then our Halloween special is just going to be
culminating in our Halloween special. Yep.
That should be a lot of fun. Make sure you tune into that. We'll drop that Halloween night. Who knows how many people or how many stories we're going to have on. We're going to try to figure that out.
Also,
as many good stories as we can.
If you have any stories that you would like us to tell or something that you want just kind of said in a more like in a very storytelling way, like if you're reading it from post it on the website, leave it in a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts.
And I'm about to give the whole spiel, so that's perfect.
Yeah, we'll check it. We'll check them out.
Check them out. And that's all for tonight's show. As Nick said, remember to leave us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you tune in if you enjoyed tonight's episode, or submit feedback or a story you'd like us to share during that special at wednesday@9pm.com/14. That's wednesday@9pm.com, spelled out, no numbers. You'll also find the episode's write-up, images, locations, and references listed there if you want to dig deeper, which we always encourage you to do. And tell your friends to tune in while you're at it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. And remember, stay inside tonight.